You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Hate doing cardio? Try brushing and flossing your teeth. I'm not talking about building up a sweat. I'm talking about building a healthier mouth for a healthier heart. For a healthier you. Smile Generation trusted dentists look at your care through the lens of the mouth-body connection, because what happens in the mouth plays a critical role for the rest of your body. To find a dentist near you committed to treating all of you, visit smilegeneration.com/confidence today and live longer, healthier, and happier with confidence unleashed.
All right, here we go on a Thursday. It's Cody and Gold, Alex Gold, Cody Tapp, Drew Nixon with you. You know, since the Wittesons have been launched, you know the Royals haven't lost. I know it's just a few games, but you know they're undefeated since the Wittesons began. Should have started a long time ago.
It did, but, you know, the official launch was Monday, and all they did was
win, and then win, and then Sunday they also won, which means the Royals are in a bit of a heater, which means the Wittesons maybe are in a little bit of a heater. As a reminder, we'll have all this stuff, these stickers, the buttons. If you're watching the video stream, well, it's probably not up yet. The eye black. We'll have some stuff to give away for the kids or for you, the adults. On Sunday, the event starts at 10:30. The free Bobby Wood Jr. haircut starts at 10:30. The look-alike contest will be after that. We've already told you one, at the very least, one of the prizes that you can sit Crown Club with Alex and I during the game. We are told in view of a television camera, because we want to draw some attention to the Wittesons, and you can certainly help us do that by coming out on Sunday. Really, really looking forward to it, man. We're only a couple days away now.
Yeah, launch event Sunday is going to be a great way to kick this thing off, and hopefully the Royals keep on winning. They're off today, of course, and then tomorrow the New York Mets come to town. We'll talk more about that series tomorrow, because for those that, and understandably so, will say, hey, all right, you did it against the Pirates. Now let me see you go do that against a quality team, a Mets team that I think is like a half game out or so the top of the NL East. And that's a fair thing for people to say. All right, so a huge series this weekend against the Mets as the Royals are trying to inch closer and closer back to 500. Now just three games out of a wild card spot. Just like that.
I know, you know, I'll give them a lot of credit. I mean, you and I had said at the time, last Monday, I think, and then Tuesday for you, once they had, or Wednesday, maybe after they had not gotten even in the series against the Mariners.
Yep.
Like, the hope for the playoffs for me had faded. I was just about like, well, is there a way to build this team where you can still be competitive this year, but you don't buy for just this year? It felt like it had slipped away because of the losing streak, because of the lack of offense, all the reasons that we had mentioned on the show. Three games outside a wild card spot at the All-Star break, if they maintain that over the final three games this weekend, I mean, they, you know, the second you want to give up, they're just dragging you back in. You don't have to fully buy back in yet. You can wait till they get back to 500. You can wait till they're back in a wild card spot. But like, yeah, I watch this team now and I'm back reinvested back into every game, back seeing if they can win every game, Gold, because they've given it life again. They've given it some, even if you don't think they're making the playoffs still, you have to at least consider it again, which a week ago was very hard to do.
Well, it's fun to watch again. Winning is fun. Back-to-back nights with walk-offs. Who doesn't like walk-off hits?
I do like that.
Jack Caglione hitting 466-foot home runs. That's also pretty fun to watch, pretty fun to hear. This is how it sounded last night, by the way.
Falter delivers, and Caglione blasts it. Deep center field. Cruises back. He looks up. It's way out of here. Jack Caglione's second home run at Kauffman Stadium is a moonshot to dead center. 460. 110.8 off the bat. Whoa! A two-run homer for Jack Caglione. The Royals lead 3-0 in the bottom of the fourth inning.
Back-to-back games with home runs. Okay. All righty.
Little something
Let's go.
Going.
Let's go.
By the way, did he get all of it? Is 466 everything he
no,
can get?
No.
What is your guess for the longest home run Caglione hits in his major league career? Because I'll be honest, I thought I got under that one.
488.
I might guess like 502 or something. I might be in the fives. And I know, I am very aware of how rare actual 500-foot home runs are in a real, honest-to-God baseball game. I understand that that doesn't happen. But I just watched him hit 466 to center, and I'm not totally sure he got all of it. Dude, he almost hit Crown Vision. It was real close.
Yeah, it went over two walls. It went over the first fence, you know, the regular outfield fence, then that little green, you know, batter's eye
secondary
thing or whatever.
Fence.
And then it was very close to the base of that Crown Vision.
Like, I can't even imagine. It would have looked like, remember how impressed we were by the Aaron Judge home run? It would have looked like that one had he just hit it to a different part of the field.
Oh, if there was like
center
a
center deceives how impressive that
yeah, I think
was.
That's right. Like if it was to right field, it was rivals. It would have gone on top of rivals. You know what I mean? Or over rivals, I guess.
Yes.
You know, or something.
It just hit the roof at rivals. Had it like it was an impressive home run. Everyone saw 466 feet written out. We understand. I'm just saying if it had gone to like left or right that distance, in his case, right. You would have been even more blown away by the distance of it. So, yeah, pretty happy that Jack Caglione. And look, maybe this goes back to what you had said. I think a good point 2 days ago, which is if Salvador Perez and Bobby Witt Jr. and Vinny Pasquantino are doing the heavy lifting for the offense and you're not the savior. Because I want to remind everybody, when Jack Caglione came up to the bigs, they had specifically said their hope was that they could call him up when the offense was humming and he was just another key to the cog. They didn't call him up when the offense was humming. The offense was garbage when they called him up, and it stayed garbage for 3 weeks while he was a big league player. And now what? I think it's a coincidence that all of a sudden, now that the offense is performing, the offense is doing some things on its own, that maybe it's getting a little bit easier for Jack Caglione. And I'm not saying he's like lighting the world on fire, although I still think this just goes back to the automatic balls and strike stuff. Watching him strike out in that first at bat, when he took two, when they're like, hey, don't be such a free swinger, Jack. We want you to know the zone. And he has to watch both strike one and strike three called strikes that are balls. You're like, well, how's he supposed to learn the zone if when he watches a pitch go by that is a ball, it gets called a strike? That just goes back to the other thing. But I don't think it's a coincidence that the offense is playing well. Now Jack Caglione is also hitting better.
Well, I think it's just the pressure is off of him because the
yes.
guys that you need to count on and they should lean on and the vets that have been part of this, the vets that carried the team last year, they're now doing their part. They're all hitting at the same time, Vinny, Bobby, and Salvi, of course. And so now you just go out there and hopefully play baseball. And I don't know if it's going to continue the rest of the season for Jack or not, but this is a really, really promising sign that he just has to feel 1,000% better about
Way
just
his shoulders, yeah.
his standing, his confidence, just like all of it, like whatever you want, pressure and just, you know, being down on yourself, all of that, like that has to be almost completely flipped now based off the last couple days. And a lot of that just has to do with the team winning.
Yeah, that's what helps. Because when he came up and he wasn't hitting, they were losing and he wasn't hitting. Now, if you're winning, it doesn't matter if you go 0-for-4. It's a lot easier. Look, there are very few players I've covered. There are very few players I've covered that they go 0-for-4 and the team wins 10-1 and they're upset. Versus vice versa. They go 4-for-4 and the team loses 10-1 and they're super happy. Most players operate in the, if the team won, I'm in a pretty good. I've known a couple of players that were not that way, sadly. That they could go 0-for-4 in a 10-1 victory and they were still pissed. Like, and you're like, no, it doesn't need to be that way. The key is like you're contributing because his home run ends up mattering, right? You win a walk-off game, you win a one-run game each of the last two nights. You're responsible for a two-run home run and a one-run home run. You weren't the guy who got the walk-off, but they needed your runs to get the win in each of the last 2 days. That's got to feel good.
It's crazy. Look, last year's team did not rely on the home run ball, but it is wild, as disastrous at home as June was. They had one win, right, in the month of June, where they won in 12 or whatever.
At home?
At home, at the K.
Yeah.
And then to see this series to start the month of July, and I understand it's against the Pirates, okay? I get that, but they can only play who they can play, and so far on this homestand, they've only played the Pirates. All of a sudden, the home runs, I mean, that's what we always joke about, you know, it gets warmer out and that kind of stuff. I mean, it was warm in June, too. I might add, it was warm.
It was pretty warm. I remember warm days
June. Was kind of hot as well.
Wait a second, are you sure?
So I just, what the heck has changed in July from the power numbers? We know the overarching thing is hit with runners in scoring position. Mm-hmm. And ironically enough, weren't they at one point last night 1-for-7?
Yeah, they were.
With runners in scoring position, I believe heading into the 6th or 7th inning yesterday. So the home runs have definitely been a big part. And we're going to talk at 11 o'clock about still, all right, now that you have 3-4 guys hitting offensively, even more reason to still be interested in a long-term trade acquisition that helps you offensively. Like that, this should make that. I still am out on the rental thing. I still don't believe this team is not 10 over 500 where I'm fine with buying off rental players. I still don't think that is a smart path to go down if I am the Royals front office. I'm fine with going and getting a bat. Totally fine with that. But it cannot be a rental.
Multiple years of control.
As exciting as what this last week has been for them, and they're playing a heck of a lot better baseball offensively, and they're winning games, I don't want them trading for a guy that is going to be here for 2 months.
Sorry, I had to take my Bobby glasses off so I could read Baseball Reference. The sunglasses are a little too dark. This is the other part of it is, we had a lot of conversations, I think fairly so, in the early part of the season of, has the age finally just fully caught up with Salvador Perez, and we are seeing the official, like, it's over. And we got to look at, like, Carter Jensen's, by the way, hit incredibly well in
AAA.
Shot in
AAA.
He's hitting homers. He's hitting for average. He's getting on base. And so, like, I was worried we were going to be in August starting to have the conversations of, is it going to be easy to walk on Salvador Perez because Carter Jensen's right there on the doorstep, and we can start having conversations around that. Salvador Perez turned a season around starting now when they need the wins. He was, and I don't have to give you the stats, awful in April, March, and May. He was really bad in those. In June, he hit .255 with a .305 on base, had 5 homers and 17 RBI. And now already in July, in just 9 games, he has 4 home runs, is hitting .371 with a .389 on base percentage and a .1217 OPS. Since June, so exactly a month, since June 8th, he's got like a 900 OPS and a bunch of homers. And so, like, if Salvi getting hot is maybe the best out of any of the hitters. Vinny's been producing for a while. Bobby's been producing for a while. But Salvi was so bad those first few months in the middle of your order, it was a black hole getting to anywhere. Salvi's getting hot again. So, like, maybe I counted Salvi out too soon. But the real question is always, can he maintain this? You know,
I mean, that's the question still with the entire group. You know, right now, this is a lot of fun. This is a lot like last year and what they're doing offensively and the guys that are being involved offensively. And then we'll see. It's only 2 games. But if Jack were to get going, of course, that changes everything. Salvador Perez throughout his career has been a streaky hitter. I would say, though, this year in particular, it took him a lot longer to get going. Normally, like, hey, in April or May, that's slow. But then he gets hot in June. You said his numbers were better in June. But what he's done in July, this is Salvador Perez, like...
His numbers in June are probably more like career numbers.
What he's doing in July, this is him being hot. Right now, Salvador Perez, as we sit here on July 10th, is a hot hitter.
Yes.
And it's obviously much, much needed for them heading into an All-Star break. And we're going to see what they do against the Mets this weekend. It's a very good Mets team. I guess maybe you get a break because the Mets are playing a doubleheader today while you have an off day. And so maybe that sets up their bullpen worse. Depending on what
they might get lucky,
depending on what they do, you know, but this is a Mets team. That's one of the better teams in baseball. I think, as I said, they're like a half game out. I think it's the Phillies who are leading the NL East.
Text line mentioning a player, by the way, from the 816, by the way, Garcia steadily going under the radar, still hitting every game. Totally agree on that. Can we say something about Mike?
This has gotten ridiculous.
It's
all right?
Unbelievable. It's unbelievable.
On Monday, it was one thing. We were sitting here and then look, your team is below 500. You're not getting 5 All-Stars, okay? In fact, even the Tigers just now got their 5th All-Star due to an alternate. So you're not getting 5 All-Stars on a team that's 4 or 5, you know, under 500. Bobby and Chris Bubich, of course, are All-Stars. And Bobby might end up starting after all this because Jacob Wilson got hit by a pitch. He did not fracture his wrist, fortunately. Jacob Wilson did not. But they still might hold him out. We'll see. There's a chance Bobby, because of an injury, ends up starting. But anyway, Michael Garcia wasn't picked initially. We both thought that was a snub.
Yeah, but okay.
Then
it's a close call.
Then Alex Bregman, because he's hurt, needed an alternate. Okay, there's an opportunity. Nope, they pick somebody else for the alternate. You're like, wow, that's ridiculous. But all right, Junior Caminero, and he's in the Home Run Derby. All right, really nice player. Then, yesterday, it's another alternate slot for an infielder available. He gets passed over again. Now, he got passed over, I believe, for a member of the Detroit Tigers, who are the best team in baseball, and maybe it's as simple as that. But if you just compare WAR and some of the metrics, not every single one, but some of the metrics for Mikel compared to the two alternates, Mikel's been the better player. I guess it truly is just down to if the Royals were in first place in their division, Mikel Garcia would be an all-star. But it's crazy that three opportunities to get in and he's been passed over, and he's clearly not getting in now.
I try not to like get over. I get it because the team's not 40 games over 500 or whatever at the all-star break. Just continually overlooking a player like that is offensive. And look, he's just saying he's taking the high road on social media. I've seen a couple of his little God's plan or like it is what it is. Just saying I'm not going to let this deter me. But when you work that hard at your craft and then you have the year you're having to get overlooked like four times in a row, it's stupid. And you're right. The first one I could have made the argument for, right? I thought Mikel Garcia should have been the all-star over him. But hey, I'm sure the fan of the other team thought differently. The second time I'm like, I think he was definitively better than that player. So this one's a little more egregious, but fine. You want to make another argument because of home runs and RBIs. All right. I'm going to let this go. The third time getting passed over is stupid. It's now you're just leaving him off of the list because he's not a household name, but the guys you're replacing him with aren't household names either. And that part is just silly.
913-586-7965, the Jay Southland Social Service text line. Do you buy into this? A few people have texted it in, and I it would be a small percentage, but I do always wonder in the back of my mind. We know Aaron Boone is the manager for the AL squad. We also know Jazz Chisholm, Mikel Garcia had the beef and everything like that.
I wouldn't be surprised.
Does that hurt him, his cause for these alternate slots?
Why wouldn't that be in play?
I think it's part of it. I think it's a small part, but I think it's part of the equation, along with the team not being above 500 and all that. But from an individual standpoint, Mikel Garcia, he's not even the third alternate. That's crazy.
Honestly, not something that had come to mind right away because I'm like, I don't like to think that there's some deep state conspiracy versus just every manager doesn't know the game as well, or these decisions are being made with multiple people or in conjunction with Major League Baseball. I absolutely now think that that is part of the equation. If you can find any comparable player with a guy who doesn't hate my guy, Jazz Chisholm, then I'm going to do that. Matter of fact, get the AL managers out of there and just go legend guys. Guys who are out of like Ned Yost.
Oh, I wasn't thinking that.
American League.
Okay. I wasn't thinking legendary managers. I'm thinking legendary players get also to manage the All-Star game. Imagine if Ken Griffey Jr. Yeah, I love how we both went there first. Yeah. I mean, for our age.
Dude, '90s legendary player.
Ken Griffey Jr. is the manager of the AL All-Stars. You know how badass that would be? That's what you want to add some more fun to the All-Star week and weekend? That would be really cool. Pick legendary former MLB players to be the manager in the All-Star game. If you're an actual manager, let Aaron Boone have a couple days off. What I mean?
He's like, actively working. Ken Griffey Jr.'s got time between his photography.
He's doing
work,
all that
I assume.
Photography. Yeah, that's true.
Him and Randy Johnson. Weird that two of the best players of my generation are just like picked up a big camera and were like, this is fun. And they shoot sports, but they also like, you'll see Randy Johnson's got like a thriving wildlife photography business. Or whatever. So it's just not something you'd necessarily expect. But yeah, no, I absolutely think it's part of it. Even if Major League Baseball is stepping in, they're not going to be the Major League Baseball is not going to pound the table and be like, tell Aaron Boone, it's got to be Mikel Garcia. They're not going to do
and
that.
I don't,
but yeah, I think that that's probably part of it. Sure.
And I don't 100% know exactly, in fairness, how the alternates are selected. I kind of assume the manager's involved in that. I don't know if they go off of the original fan vote stuff, because that's where at the time we pointed out how ridiculous Mikel Garcia was 7th in fan voting. But I don't know what factor that has now that we're post selection and it's alternates. Is Aaron Boone or Major League Baseball, I guess, if we're being real, are they just saying, all right, well, for alternates, let's get what the fans want? And Mikel, unfortunately, just didn't have any votes because between national fans and even locally, I guess, did not vote enough for Mikel Garcia. The fact that he played multiple positions probably helped. There was, I guess, multiple things that you could use as an excuse, but it is kind of crazy. If this team was, five games above 500 or close in the divisional race, I think Mikel Garcia would have been in.
I just think you take it out of that. If he was a New York Yankee, he'd be in. If he were a Houston Astro, he'd be in. If he were a Dodger, he'd be in. This is about market, and this is why we get offended by it, and this is why we loved so much when we ruined and changed the All-Star game voting.
Vote Omar.
Because, and you all got mad at us. Well, the reason why we had to do that one time and did that one time for Vote Omar is because every other time it's given a choice for who you choose, if this player was in a different market, he'd be in the All-Star game already. Or if, I don't know, Jazz Chisholm was a little bit less of a baby, he'd be in the All-Star game already. And unfortunately for Mikel Garcia, he's got to watch it at home like everyone else, and that just seems unfair.
Video stream is up and running, by the way. You can watch us. Make sure you subscribe on Facebook, YouTube, Twitch, X, that way you don't miss any of the shows. You can see we are rocking the Wittison gear today. Someone did say, two different texts. One says, Alex looks like the guys in the ski parking lot that smell like weed and Fireball.
That's
and
pretty
use
much
the
what
word
we said
shred
yesterday.
And
that
gnar.
Right.
Yeah, the wig definitely looks more skaterish, skierish, whatever you want to use that.
Yeah.
And then, but yeah, someone else says they think I should grow my hair out long. That will definitely not happen.
Skater.
That will definitely not. It's one thing to have the goatee and mustache for Sunday, and that's coming in strong, I feel like.
That's going to look good on
it'll
Sunday.
It'll be good by the time we get to Sunday when I shave everything but the stash and the goatee. But the hair itself, the hair is never going to be this long in my life, ever.
No?
Ever.
Not going to go,
no.
Was it ever? Did
no.
you have like long hair when you were
as
a kid?
As a baby or kid or as a kid? No.
I never had long hair either. I don't even have like a, other than just
I
like,
told you, like Drew, I still swear, Drew could have, I mean, some of the photos back in the day with the clothes and the old profile pic, I think Drew could have had the long skater hair and everything.
It wouldn't be out of the question.
My hair, I never grew my hair out. It was
no?
always short, no.
You're just saying it would have fit, you know?
I don't know.
I don't know that it would have ever fit your vibe as a person. I've only known
looking
you
looking at the wig now,
a certain amount
it,
of time.
I think it fits, if it's gold, I would say. Like, if your hair was that long.
I don't think it would have fit him as a kid. I don't think it fits him now. Like, I don't think long hair was ever going to be like Alex's look. Could you imagine him with one of those little tiny little man buns or something?
Oh, gosh.
Little pony.
No. Wait, so for the Casey Kern
man
media
bun,
game,
no.
No chance.
Have the bun. No, yeah, not
well,
the man
should I
bun.
Wear the wig for the Casey Kern media game?
Yeah, maybe.
That might be a bit much.
I mean, it might fall off,
would
which
fall
would be
off.
Hilarious.
Yeah,
I
it's going to be probably
it
hard to
off.
Operate.
I mean,
it would be
hilarious.
We'll say that for the people who are there on Sunday.
Yeah.
You know?
True. True.
A little away from the Royals, and we'll talk more about the Wittison stuff and give you an update on where those things are and some college football as well. But Trey Smith was on Up and Adams, who apparently gets every Chiefs player
she
on
does.
The planet on her podcast, and credit to her. But we've mentioned the deadline before. July 15th, they have to have a long-term deal done with Trey Smith, or he has to play under the franchise
next
tag
Tuesday.
For the entire year and thus risk the Chiefs losing him in free agency the following year and having to pay the full freight franchise tag number for him this year. Now they're only 5 days away from the deadline. He spoke to Kay Adams, and of course, she asked about the upcoming deadline.
You got tagged this offseason. I want to talk a little business. Highest paid guard in NFL history. Mm-hmm. July 15th is here. Okay,
yeah.
Long-term deal. What's the latest from Beach?
You know, I leave it to the hands of my agents and, you know, obviously the front office staff of the Chiefs are elite. And, you know, at the end of the day, I just let them take care of it. I just have to focus on being the best version of myself, being the best football player and being prepared for training camp because St. Joe's is around the corner. And that's going to be we don't want to talk about that right now.
So
the end part is great. That has nothing to do with the contract. We almost left that in just because St. Joe's hot and the players must
it's
hate gonna it.
Be a, it's going to be a miserable time for them, And they're going to be, you know, going through quite the camp with Andy Reid and everything. But the beginning, look, he said the right things, right? You know, I'm letting my agent handle it. All that's typical stuff you would hear from a player. Today is Thursday, Tuesday, like this weekend. Like I would expect to start hearing something this weekend, right?
I'm taking it as a good sign that we haven't heard anything. And then rather in that interview clip saying, I hope we can find a number that everybody agrees on, he said, the Chiefs front office is elite. My agents are elite. They'll work it out. That doesn't sound like a guy who's worried about contention over the final 5 days of this, right? He seems like a guy who's relaxed. I am still very optimistic this deal's going to get done. I will begin to grow concerned, Gold, if by the end of the weekend, so we start the show Monday morning at 10 a.m., just a few days away, or day away from the deadline, if there's been nothing, they're close, they're talking, they're on the 1 yard line, any of the normal football cliches that people like to toss around as it relates to these, I will start getting concerned. I'm still not worried about it because it still doesn't seem like anyone's talking like there's animosity on either side. Not a single leaked report of, we're hearing Trey Smith's demands are unreasonable because we know where that comes from. Or we're hearing the Chiefs only want to do a 4-year deal because we know what side that's coming from. None of that so far. It's been kind of crickets for the better part of a month. The fact he's talking kind of calmly makes me still weirdly confident, even though we haven't heard anything. You got a percentage you'd put it on?
Oh, I still think, you know, 75-80% chance.
That's about right.
This thing gets done. I honestly, we've said it, but when they decided to trade Joe Tooney, I think they put themselves in a spot where like they have to get this thing done. Otherwise, I can promise you on Wednesday, if we come on the show and they don't get a long-term deal done, then it was a massive mistake and they botched it. I don't think they're going to botch it though.
Yeah. I hope not. We've talked about, not ad nauseum, but we have definitely on this show, and I will beat it to death if they actually don't get this deal done. Huge mistake for a variety of reasons they don't get it done. Huge mistake to let Tooney go, not invest in other areas, all those things in between. The other contracts it slows down. It will cost you to get Trey Smith if you try to get him again next year. All the reasons why this deal's got to get done by Tuesday.
Up next, we know Big 12 Football Media Days wrapping up yesterday in Frisco, Texas, and we heard from Lance Leipold what he said about rivalries, and I'm guessing some K-State fans aren't going to like it. Coming up in about 8 minutes or so, we'll talk more about how the Chiefs have built their roster and maybe could build their roster moving forward. As we know, Patrick Mahomes will once again be due for a new contract, probably after this 2025 season. But let's talk a little college football for a little bit. Next week, SEC Media Days. This week, Big 12 Media Days wrapped up, I think, yesterday, officially, in Frisco. And you know, if anybody's been around that before, basically each team sends 2 to 3 players, usually their head coach, and they give their spiel about how the season is going to go and what changes this year. It's been all a lot about conference realignment and NIL and how they're navigating that. For KU, they've been talking about their stadium. Chris Kleiman's been talking a lot about just his program. I think they have the best chance easily, not even close, of the locals to get to a college football playoff this year.
Yeah, On3 did their little quick coaches poll, essentially. And the predictor was Arizona State versus K-State in the Big 12 title game, I believe, when you couldn't vote for your own school.
I mean, they don't have, you know, we can get into that stuff more as the season gets closer, but Arizona State, ton of pressure on Leavitt. The question will be, without Scadaboo, who's the next big playmaker for them? For K-State, Avery Johnson's the real deal, but can he elevate his game as well? They've got everything in place, I think, over in Manhattan to out of the three locals easily to perhaps be the team that gets out of the locals for the first time to a college football playoff. But yesterday, I'm assuming a comment that will not excite one of the local fan bases. Two of them, I think, would agree. One is going to say, well, this is just because we've been beating you guys. But Lance Leipold was asked who their biggest rival is.
Well, you know, rivalry games are what makes college football so special and in of itself. And I didn't really realize when I first got to Lawrence that the Kansas-Missouri game was more of a rivalry than Kansas-Kansas State.
Yeah.
But now with the two teams in conference, you know, we've got to do a better job making that a balanced one in the in-state rivalry. But to go to Columbia this year will be special. I'm sure there's a lot of people on both sides of it. They're going to be fired up. And to see some of these rivalries get renewed is special. And again, will be a great time, and we'll be looking forward to it.
I think we would all agree that the biggest consequence of conference realignment has been we have killed so many rivalries in sports. I think we all agree it's pretty obvious.
It's the worst part of all of it.
No doubt about that. I also think it's true that KU and K-State, when one team in football in particular, Kansas State, has been winning for 20-something years, that also hurts the ability for it to be a hardcore rivalry in your biggest rival. So those are all true, in my opinion. I would think we all agree on that. Where people might disagree, at least in Manhattan with me on this, is it's not even close to me on who the current rival is for KU still. And I don't care that they haven't played football for a decade, okay?
Yeah.
KU and MU are each other's biggest rivals. There's historical context to this. We all know about the Orange Bowl year and the game at Arrowhead and the controversy with who got to go to the Orange Bowl and all that. The real hate. They finally started playing basketball again. It's not even close. KU's biggest rival is Missouri. MU's biggest rival is Kansas. And I just don't believe there's much of a debate there. I understand if you're a K-State fan, you probably don't like hearing that. And you can fairly say it's just because we beat you. And that's fine. You can say that. But I truly believe it's not close because there's so much history involved in the hate between KU and MU. Heck, Cody, when we bring up the stadium talk on this show, Kansas side of the state line versus Missouri, you see the text as much as I do.
Half of them are, I'd never live in Kansas, man. I'd rather be dead, and the other half is saying I'd rather be dead than live in Missouri.
Yeah. It's not even close. KUMU, those are each other's rivals.
Despite the fact this show resides on opposite sides of the border, and I guess technically I went to a University of Missouri school.
Yeah, you're a Missouri guy, Cody.
I'm a Missouri guy by default. I teach at UMKC. And, you went to Kansas, obviously, and grew up on the Kansas side. Look, there's a couple of things. I actually think, had the rivalry never been renewed, KU and K-State could have changed that over time. They're in-state. They don't like each other. I think rivalries work sometimes because you get the big brother, little brother stuff that works in that. Because in football, Kansas State gets to be big brother and be like, look at you, you're a joke. And then in basketball, Kansas got to be, look at you, no, you're the joke. And so like for the entire year round, these two cycles worked really well together. You got to just trash talk depending on which time of year it was for your school to operate. So if the rivalry had never been brought back, slowly over time, because they're in a conference, because of this stuff, I think there could have been some more juice there that have gotten those rivalries closer. But because they're playing again, even though it never will be the same as it was when we were growing up, that's the other part. It'll never be the same. The bigger rivalry has always been KUMU, and I think probably always will be KUMU. What is frustrating about me is that conference realignment, starting back to then, took two rivals who were one of the longest rivalries in college sports history and said, well, we can't play each other anymore because you're leaving. And why are you, like all this dumb stuff that does for Leipold to be like, it's the most important thing of our sport. We don't even play in the same conference. You're like, that's the problem, Lance. The problem is you're telling me that pageantry and rivalries is one of the things that drives your sport. And you two don't even play together. You're not even in the same conference.
Well, now they're going to finally start. They're now finally going to start doing that again, starting this year in Columbia. And I'll be honest, though, maybe my excitement will get there when we get to the weekend of. But this far out, you know, like am I counting down the days till KU plays MU in Columbia? I'll be honest. No, I'm not. I'm not. Well, I'll be fired up by the time we get there. I'm sure I will. It also is that first weekend of the NFL season is the same weekend of KUMU. Now, the Chiefs play Friday night, so this helps a little bit. Yeah. They play Friday night, and then the football game between KU and MU is on a Saturday in Columbia. So it's not like you're trying to do both things. But NFL has become just such a much bigger thing in the Kansas City market than when you referenced, Cody, when we were growing up, and even go back to, obviously, 08, 09. And you think about where the Chiefs were at as a franchise, where the Royals were at as a franchise. We had not in our lifetime seen a championship on the professional side of things from the baseball team or the football team. And so college was a much bigger deal. And by the way, I'm not saying that people don't care about their college teams. But if anybody has paid attention, and anybody, frankly, that grew up here has listened to sports talk radio over the last 25 or 30 years, you guys have probably noticed it as well. The conversations around college sports are not the same as what they were 15 years ago, because the Chiefs and even the Royals, after they won their championship and World Series and went to the World Series back-to-back years, that has changed everything in this city.
Do you know how I know that they're right? Is that because when this happened, what is it, 15, 20 years ago? How long ago now did MU leave to the SEC?
Was it 2012?
I mean, it's been forever.
So 15
years ago, when that eventual move happened, the two conferences both tried to, and this is why the rivalry got renewed. Both conferences tried to be like, here it is, you know? So they pitched. Big 12 did heavy average. KU, K-State. Look at them go against each other. In-state rivals. And likewise, the SEC pushed Missouri and Arkansas down Missouri fans' throats. Look how close you guys are geographically. Mm-hmm. They're up against each other, Missouri and Arkansas. And what happened in both of those schools is they're like, we don't care as much as the other one. And look, I think Kansas State is KU's second biggest rival.
Oh, for sure.
For what it's worth.
Yeah,
I just think
absolutely.
K-State's biggest rival is Kansas.
Yes.
So like, it's not that they're not rivals or don't have bad blood. It's just first and first for those two teams is MU and KU, vice versa.
I also just thought you cannot replace the literal historical war in context to that.
Should KU and K-State have a war in between the two of them? What's the midpoint between the two schools?
You cannot replicate the true historical significance of Kansas versus Missouri in the actual border war going back to slavery. I mean, you just can't replicate that. I mean, there's way too much history behind the rivalry. I'm glad they're playing again at this point in time. And we'll
see.
It's
not even up to the conferences, it's the schools.
What's that?
Because this whole time, Missouri could have played KU this entire time.
Well, Kansas refused, you know, in fairness, Kansas refused to play Missouri exactly. when this all went down at first as yeah. well. And if we're being fair about the conversation, I can say that as a KU alum. I was happy, admittedly, at the time that they said, screw you, we're not going to play you. I was on board. Obviously, Bill Self was very vocal about it at the time as well. Uh-huh. As time goes on, cooler heads prevail, et cetera, and different regimes come in as far as athletic departments and
also,
everything. And
everyone's moved to conferences in college football
now. It's just, it is what it is. Yeah, it is what it is. That weekend, as someone pointed out, like depending on what the Royals are doing, you're going to have the Royals that weekend. Chiefs on Friday night, KUMU Saturday, NFL Woo. On Sunday. Like, it is a loaded weekend. Loaded weekend.
Could be the Royals in a playoff race, Chiefs opening game in Brazil, and KUMU? Are you going to, I mean, settle in, I guess, Gold. I don't think you want to make any other plans that weekend. It sounds like we're pretty well and booked.
I would say so.
To go with it. But yeah, it is tough. And like, I think sometimes it stinks because it feels like Leipold's not even like, he actually handled it pretty democratically. I mean, he was like,
oh, I don't think he said anything. No, that was wrong, bad even.
He's like, we got to work hard to nurture that in-state rivalry. But I didn't realize how big KUMU was until we kind of got back to it. We see it all the time in the text line. There is still bad blood there.
For sure.
Over at ESPN.com. Where our friend Nate Taylor has announced he's headed,
yeah,
by
congrats
the way.
To Nate.
Congrats
We're excited
to Nate Taylor.
Nate Taylor. He
new
will still be joining
writer.
Us on the show, by
he
the
will
way.
Be. New beat writer over at ESPN. If you missed his announcement over on social media, go congratulate Nate on his move over to ESPN. But over on ESPN, this was not an article written by Nate. He just announced today he was heading over there. They were in the offseason trying to build a dream team, right? What do? Let's build a dream team with actual cap numbers, factoring all this in, let's take in what we want to pay quarterbacks, what we want to pay wide receivers and offensive linemen and see the best that we could do. And kind of what I expected was when they built this dream team, they'd go as cheap as possible on quarterback, say Jaden Daniels, in an effort to build the most dominant defense available to you, the most dominant offensive weapons available to you, and just put them with the best. And what happened was when they started building, when these ESPN analysts started building their dream rosters, they instead just continued to build it with Patrick Mahomes at his current cap number rather than work around. And in a way, I thought it was a great exercise of, you can have great wide receivers, you can have great weapons, and it also speaks to what kind of team you can build if you draft. Because the offense would include Justin Jefferson and Puka Nacua and Ladd McConkey, who is a rookie, and Brock Bowers, who's on a rookie contract, right? Those guys who are on rookie deals still, like Ladd and Brock Bowers, you can still build it around there and have a super team. But there is no, the one place you do not shortchange your cash, Gold, is a quarterback. I just like that they go through the whole exercise and they're still like, I'll pay Patrick Mahomes at full freight.
And you know why?
So what?
You know why it's still the best to build around? Not only because of the talent, but it goes back to the very first day he signed the new contract after the first Super Bowl win in Miami. And you go, you know, I think it was March. I don't know if it was in March or June of that offseason when the big announcement was that they signed Patrick Mahomes to this unprecedented 10-year, $500 million deal. And it has all these guarantee mechanisms. Remember, that was like the phrase that all of a sudden nobody had really used and it became the whole thing.
I don't think anybody's used that in a contract since.
That's, well, because nobody else wants to give their quarterback a 10-year contract because there's uncertainty, right? Like, you're not worried about Patrick Mahomes. And it also takes the player being willing to do it, right? Not every player wants to sign a 10-year deal because you could also be leaving some money on the table, potentially.
Yeah.
The reason why the answer in building out your roster and why he would still be the quarterback financially as well is because of that flexibility in the deal. It allows Brett Veach, even next offseason, while the cap number creeps up, they're going to go revisit that. They're going to give a add some new years to it, some more money, but the cap hits,
that number two,
the cap hits will be balanced out a little bit more.
I like all this. Part of this exercise was like, yeah, we know the thing about Mahomes, but also what I was realizing is every time we have the conversation of, could you for 1 year build a super team? Like, how do the Eagles keep doing it? And I don't know, man, if all of these players all together fit under a cap number, it doesn't seem all that bad anymore. Other than it requires you to draft incredibly well, because you got to put some rookies on the squad or players on rookie deals or guys who just signed extensions, but they're still in the first year of their cap number exploding. This team would be $70 million over the cap in year two of this, wouldn't they? Like, based on the one that they built, we're all looking at the same thing. Like, Jordan Mailata is the left tackle in this situation. Well, he's in the first year of a brand new contract. So his number is still low. All of the numbers would balloon following this. The other part of this is, like, I kind of like the idea of the, like, are there any young players that are still cheap in Kansas City who would do it? They went with Patrick Surtain, but Trent McDuffie would have been a possible answer in here. They went Surtain and Christian Benford, but had you made the argument for Trent McDuffie, the answer would have been the same. He could have been on this super team and nobody would have thought terribly hard about it, because it would have just made sense.
What was the rules for this, though? Like, that mean, cause
just be under the cap, pretty much.
Just be, yeah. I mean, because I'm like,
based on the current cap number.
Yeah, because anybody that's on a rookie contract, I mean, well, then, you know, it's like Brock Bowers would be the only answer anybody would ever pick then for tight end in this hypothetical.
Oh yeah, he's a rookie and makes no money.
Yeah, he makes no money and he's, you know, gonna potentially for the next decade be the best tight end in football.
There's a couple of players that would not change. One is Brock Bowers. I think that that's almost a borderline lock. I think because you're having to get under the cap,
Myles Garrett and Micah Parsons both. That's a lot. They're the best edge rushers, but that's a ton of money to put together there for both of them. Micah Parsons, it hasn't got the new deal yet, but yeah, I don't know
you
if
can't
you can
trust
actually
young pass rushers. That's the problem. Yeah. How many young pass rushers come in the league and just get, we do this all the time, get 14 sacks. I just pay TJ Watt his money. I don't care. Like a pass rushing quarterback, those are the positions that you pay. Like they chose Ladd McConkey. I might choose Brian Thomas, right? I might
Brian
choose a
Thomas
different,
is absolutely a better player than McConkey. And McConkey is great. But
yeah, I would just probably choose a different, or Malik Nabers. I would just choose a different young wide receiver on a rookie deal.
Why did they pick Ladd McConkey?
I think it's because they were envisioning slot. Think about it. They got Justin Jefferson and Puka Nacua on the outside, and they were thinking, we're just going to let Ladd McConkey run in the inside and kind of handle their business. The only other, you know, and again, they went with like a rookie center instead of paying a guy like Creed Humphrey. A lot of this speaks to just like the positional value. You got to have some mix of all those guys to go with it. It was just a good reminder for me that even if you give an entire ESPN grouping of NFL writers free reign to try to go cheap at quarterback or cheaper at quarterback, right? Because Patrick Mahomes' cap number this year is the second highest, I think, out of any of the starting quarterbacks. I think second only maybe Dak, as far as like what their cap hit will be this
season. Deshaun's still up there, isn't he?
Oh, Deshaun. Maybe it's third.
Or is it next year? I don't have it in front of me.
Even if he was $0. Like, because you could have got cheap and just had Jaden Daniels. Imagine the team you could build if you had Jaden Daniels. You wouldn't have to go rookie wide receiver. You could just pay Jamar Chase and the other two guys they just mentioned at wide receiver. You could pay whoever the hell you wanted. It wouldn't matter. Mm-hmm. But nobody's willing to do that because they still understand the value of Patrick Mahomes. That's what stood out to me. As a reminder, this Sunday, starting at 10:30, is our official first event for the Wittizens, a fan group for Bobby Wood Jr. that we have now gotten officially sanctioned by the Kansas City Royals and by Major League Baseball. So they're on board. We're not having to operate below board like normal on this show. We will have some giveaways, including stickers and buttons and eye black. We have said at 10:30, you can get a free Bobby Witt Jr. haircut for our lookalike contest. You don't have enough hair, you have too much hair and you don't want to get rid of it all, we will have wigs available for you for the Bobby Witt Jr. contest. That'll take place after that, and the winner will at very least get to sit in the Crown Club with me and Alex for the game that day, which is an awesome prize.
Mets as well. See Juan Soto up close and personal.
You can imagine what it was like to beat them in the World Series again 10 years ago.
Yeah, exactly. And I think it's important, as you said, we've had a ton of people asking about, hey, there's no way I can get a mullet. That's why we've got the wigs as well. So yeah, whether you just don't have the hair, not the right hairstyle, whatever it may be, right? Like you can still participate. Because the facial hair is going to be considered as well. I'm telling you, when we judge this thing,
whether it's painted on or real,
yeah. If somebody has,
just feel like you should have the goatee.
Yeah, if somebody has the close on the facial hair as well, that's going to go a long ways, I think.
I don't think yours is going to be quite long enough, but it's still going to be pretty good.
No.
Had we thought of it earlier and you didn't shave for a week, we would have really had something with your goatee, I think.
Yes.
Because you even had the little chin part here. Like most people, right?
Yeah. On Sunday, I'm going to shave the cheeks and everything else, but I will have in the neck, but I will have the goatee. Oh, it's good.
I've seen you with a beard, but you're going to look.
I've never only had the stash or a goatee in my life, so this is.
Have you ever shaved it when you were just like shaving?
Oh, of course.
Just to see.
Okay. Oh, I've
you've done that, right?
Yeah, just to see
what it look like.
It gives off such a different personality. Like if you just didn't know who the person was,
it's like a different person.
You walk into a room and you're wearing a goatee. It's just such a different vibe than someone that's clean shaven.
He's going to put on his leather vest and get on his hog. Mm-hmm. Alex is just a different dude with a goatee, Drew. You wouldn't believe it.
I'll keep it for Sunday and I'll keep it for Monday's show just so we have it on video Monday if you want. But after Monday, that thing is getting shaved.
Then you're going back to normal.
I'm not wearing a stash.
Not sticking with the goatee.
No, absolutely
the stash.
Not. Absolutely
fair enough.
Not.
That's more than fair. But at least keep it up so people can see it. Although I'm sure we'll send a picture out on our social media channels. Really looking forward to anybody who wants to compete in our lookalike contest for Bobby Wood Jr. on Sunday outside of Gate B. For Bobby is where we'll be at that time.
Coming up in 10 minutes, we'll talk more about the Royals and looking ahead to the future a little bit with the rotation and potential options that they have if they trade anybody, if they extend somebody. So that's coming up in just a bit. We were talking college football earlier this segment and going through the Big 12 a little bit. We know one of the biggest stories of the offseason in college football has been Bill Belichick initially just getting hired at North Carolina and then all the other baggage now that has come out over the last couple of months. And some more details came out recently because UNC was forced to release some emails from donors, right? They're a public university. And so some people did an open records request and was able to dig into this more. Pablo Torre's done a great job with some of his reporting on this. Basically, a bunch of like angry donor alumni faculty emails around Belichick and Jordan Hudson because people are concerned. Like in one email, this is from the Daily Mail, a donor wrote, "What a total embarrassment to North Carolina. I'm withdrawing all my donations and future donations." And another email from a faculty member at UNC. The disgruntled employee complained about there not being, quote, enough money to hire the number of professors we need, but paying a 73-year-old guy with no college football experience $10 million is okay.
There is part of this that this is why, and I do think that it's just because he had no options. Had a team in the NFL offered him a job, he would have taken it. This is why I think he's a terrible fit for college football. Every part of Bill Belichick's life has always been about never giving anyone an inch to give an outside distraction. And now emails sent about you can be found as part of a public media request.
Yeah, the only thing
is an open report request. You don't need this in your world.
That last email, though, that one's just ridiculous. That's just like the classic professor doesn't get why football makes a lot of money for the university and also why the football coach makes more money than the
College professors should get paid.
Yeah, I know. And the professor
not for any selfish reasons at all.
Like that last email, though, that's an argument we've heard since the beginning of time. Like, not understanding why the football coach makes more than the history professor. I'm sorry, like, no disrespect, but like the UNC probably has enough professors. You know, they maybe didn't have a coach that might do something that nobody's ever been able to do at their program. So they took the risk. And a lot of times the money, by the way, is separate on the educational side than the athletic department is its own entity. Usually
it's almost like a separate business in a lot of cases.
That's the only thing.
State universities are a little bit different. They can't fully separate themselves versus the private ones, but there are, no doubt, different line items to go with it. But, like, the idea that all of these emails are just, like, people sending it. I will say, in my experience, most of the time, this is like, we talked about this, like, with the stadium stuff. The person who sends in an email and says, "I'm withdrawing all my donations and future donations," is definitely the dude who gave $25 to their scholarship fund once.
Oh, you think it's a small donor?
Never gave it again, and then just is raising a stink.
I don't know.
I said more often than not. Yeah. I'm not saying that one's not that, but if you're going to say that, you better have some weight behind those donations. You better not be the guy who donated $250
what,
you know, for, you know, as a part of your season ticket basketball package and thinks now you're like holding the freight on the University of North Carolina to do it. The problem is that there's no, like, if you're the school, you just watched what profile got raised at Colorado by doing a big time splashy hire. And in this case, you get the splashy hire and just so happens to get one of the greatest football minds of all time.
Well, and if you, I know you mentioned the money part of it. The fact is that North Carolina is private as well. University of North Carolina is like a private.
Okay.
I believe North Carolina, it's very difficult to get into. Correct me if I'm wrong, Gold, if you can look it up.
Yeah, it's got a low acceptance rate.
I believe it's private. It's like an 18% acceptance rate at UNC. It's crazy.
I love how Drew said, "Alex," as if I applied there and got turned down or something. Like, as I
asked, he was going to follow Roy. He was a big Roy Williams guy. He was going
to
go,
"Alex,
Roy.
I'm sure you know the answer to this one for North Carolina."
I saw you typing, and I was like, "Do you mind looking at?" Like, I saw you typing. I don't know.
Yeah,
if you're
their acceptance
there.
Rate is 19% or something. I think.
So I don't know. I think they're private. I think North Carolina actually is private. But anyways, to the point of, like, they have money there. Also, you guys know this as well as anything. Winning cures all. Where, hey, you know what? If they're out there and North Carolina,
it's a
goes,
public university.
Is it public? Okay, I'm sorry.
I thought it was public. But
anyways,
then,
like, University of North Carolina. Like the fact that it's a state.
Ignore the fact of my.
You're good.
My idiocy, as somebody called it yesterday. Sorry that I'm an idiot on the show. By the way, but hey, you know what? I'm not supposed to be here. North Carolina. If Bill Belichick wins, then you're not going to see people complaining as much. Well, right now, with all the things that are going on, I totally understand why there are boosters who are like, look, I'm not donating to something, right? I need to see something first. I don't want to dedicate my dollars to something that this man's never coached in college at a head coaching level. I need to see more before I invest my money into it, where at least with Deion had success at the FCS level, and him having the profile of recruiting, he showed that he could recruit top talent. Like, he stole Travis Hunter from Florida State.
Yeah.
I Bill Belichick, we haven't seen anything of that from him yet. So if they start out well this year and they win the first few games and they go 9-3, all of a sudden, hey, maybe Bill actually does know what he's doing. Then the investment comes in, and all of a sudden it's going to be Clemson, and North Carolina is going to be right up there in that mix with those top tier schools in the ACC. I don't even know what their over under is. I think it's 6.5.
You sent me down a rabbit hole too, by the way, Drew, because I was curious, because like, they've got a low acceptance rate because they're a well thought of education school.
Yes, very high education.
And we all know all the ones that are the smallest, right? Like Harvard and Stanford and Brown and all these ones that you don't. I instead was looking at, like, what's the school that'll just take you no matter what? What's the state school that would take you no matter what? The University of Mississippi has a 98% acceptance rate. They'll take anyone at that school.
They just want you to go to college.
Man, they want you to be a rebel. 98% though? That's a lot higher than I was expecting. I don't even think, what do you think Kansas or Missouri's or K-State's acceptance rates
KU
are?
Has changed the requirements since, like, it's tougher
Kentucky's
to get
92%.
K-State's is higher than KU's.
It is tougher to get into KU now than what it was when I got in.
I bet you K-State is the highest acceptance rate of either of them.
You think which one?
K-State.
KU's is 88.2. I mean admissions
that's
rate. Tough.
That's a big difference between 98 88.
For how many applicants? Sure. I think K-State, it might be around that range. Or maybe it's even higher.
K-State's only 79.4%.
There you go.
Oh. So every man is not a Wildcat, necessarily. No offense.
No, only 79.4% of people who apply to K-State
before the K-State fan base buries me.
Missouri's is 77%. They accept at the lowest rate.
All right, up next, guys, let's get back into the Royals a little bit and look ahead to the next couple of years on what the rotation could be, especially if they make a trade here soon. That's coming up on Cody and Gold.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Hate doing cardio? Try brushing and flossing your teeth. I'm not talking about building up a sweat. I'm talking about building a healthier mouth for a healthier heart. For a healthier you, Smile Generation trusted dentists look at your care through the lens of the mouth-body connection, because what happens in the mouth plays a critical role for the rest of your body. To find a dentist near you committed to treating all of you, visit smilegeneration.com/confidence today and live longer, healthier, and happier with Confidence Unleashed.
Can't get enough baseball? Start streaming MLB Network today. Get up to 15 out-of-market games a week live on any device, plus 24/7 access to MLB Network's award-winning shows, including live game look-ins and exclusive player interviews. And hear live radio play-by-play from all 30 clubs with MLB at Bat. Enjoy the home of baseball from virtually anywhere. Plans start as low as $5.99 per month. Sign up now at MLBNetwork.com/stream.
Available in the U.S. only. Blackout restriction applies. Visit MLB.com/subscribe for full terms and conditions.
Did you know your credit card points and miles can lose value to inflation while they collect dust? Credit card companies often reduce the redemption value of your points and miles. Imagine a credit card with rewards that can grow in value. With a Gemini credit card, you can earn Bitcoin or one of over 50 other cryptos instantly with no annual fee. Every swipe at the store or gas pump earns you instant rewards deposited straight to your account.
Plus, sign up now for a $200 Bitcoin bonus to kickstart your rewards. Visit Gemini.com/card today. Again, if you're looking to invest in Bitcoin but don't know where to start, the Gemini credit card makes it easy. Issued by WebBank, in order to qualify for the $200 crypto intro bonus, you must be approved by June 30th, 2025 and spend $3,000 in your first 90 days. Terms apply. Some exclusions apply to instant rewards in which rewards are deposited when the transaction posts. This content is not investment advice and trading crypto involves risk. For more details on rates, fees, and other Gemini credit card terms, see rates and fees.